Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.
Hey, you guys, it's Christine with Storyworthy. My 10-year anniversary celebration continues with comedian Bill Dawes.
I'm by myself. I'm walking around. I kind of climb up on the pyramids, turn around, and this guy is kind of grabbing at this woman's purse or at her hand, right? I'm thinking I'm a big, bad American, whatever the hell, savior complex I have. And I go, hey, 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 and I grab the guy's forearm. And literally when I grab his forearm, it was like something exploded because all of a sudden there are like five or six street vendors like, oh, what? And they're like yelling at me, like, get away. And I'm moving back, like, what do I do? And they're just kind of coming after me. Give me a passport. He has a gun tucked into his waistband. They go, come with us. Come. They put me in the back of a police car and we drive.
Today on the show, comedian Bill Dawes talks about being detained in Egypt. This is a nail biter, guys. Stay close.
Happy 10-year anniversary, Christine. Here's to 10 more years.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of 10 years, or you're a new listener, welcome to the show. Now, I'm really glad you guys heard Kevin Nealon last week. I know you didn't miss that episode, did you? You have to. If you're out there and you miss Kevin Nealon talking about strippers and Point Barrow, Alaska, well, you've got a real treat coming. Did you happen to hear that show, Bill Dawes?
I did not, but I love Kevin Nealon, so I will listen to it.
Well, it only dropped like 6 hours ago, so you're good.
Okay, good. Phew, I'm off the hook.
But anyway, it is super funny. And Kevin, of course, is just such a kind person and just ridiculously talented in many, many ways, not just as an actor or comedian, but as an artist. And he's got this Instagram page. I think it's Kevin Nealon Art, something like that. And he
sketches.
He paints so well, or sketches so well. I keep saying painting. Howard Stern paints. Howard Stern does a lot of beautiful work, and he does it on really small canvases, actually. Huh. So, yeah. And so, you know what? I bought a bunch of small canvases. You watch me, Bill Dawes. That's going to be a new quarantine project.
Oh, exactly.
Have you had any projects in quarantine, like around the house?
I mean, I've actually been on the road a lot. I traveled for 3.5 weeks on the road.
During quarantine?
During quarantine. So I did the opposite of staying in. I went out as much as possible. But I'm in my car, so it's safe. And I ended up traveling all around America. And I performed live comedy at Nashville with Adam Carolla.
Oh, my God. That's unbelievable.
He did your show, right?
Yeah. I love Adam. Yeah. I mean, he was like one of my inspirations to do this show, to start this show 10 years ago. I don't listen to him as much as I used to, but he's still a really, really he's just really bright, isn't he? He's so bright.
He's a smart guy, yeah.
It's almost off the charts, you know?
Yeah.
He's really quick. So where were you guys performing?
Well, he was headlining at Zany's in Nashville. And I was literally driving by, and you know, one of the things when you've been working enough as a comic is you can just like Google whatever comedy club, whatever city in, and usually there's like one or two degrees of separation. Either you know the headliner or you know someone who knows the headliner. In this case, my friend Adam Ray is really good friends with Adam Carolla. So I called him. I said, hey, can you have Adam put me on the show? And so then they put me on the show.
That is so great. Yeah. No, I mean, I know that that happens, of course, here at the Improv or at the Laugh Factory or what. I mean, I know it happens here because I've been on shows. Rita will come over to me in the lab and whisper, you know, David Spade is here and he really wants to do this 10 minutes. No pictures, no filming. Do you mind putting him up now?
Yeah.
You know, and then I do or whatever. I mean, it's not a big deal. But I never thought about it in a headlining situation in a big city. That's so.
Oh, yeah. Funny. When I this time last year, I was shooting something in Pittsburgh. It was a show. It's out on Spectrum TV now, which I guess is a thing. It's called Manhunt. I forget what it's called, but it's about the guy who bombed the Atlanta Olympic Stadium in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. No, the Richard Jewell story.
Yeah, the Richard Jewell. There's a series right now in Spectrum about it. So I was shooting that and it was an FBI guy. So it wasn't a lot of it was like they had a costume fitting and then I had to wait 4 days to shoot one scene and then wait 4 days and shoot another scene. So I was there for 2 weeks in Pittsburgh and Jay Moore was headlining. So I contacted him because I knew him through a friend and I ended up basically opening that whole week with Jay.
At
and
the improv.
Next week, yeah,
at the improv.
And the next week, Donnell Rawlings, who I went to the same high school as Donnell Rawlings.
Wow.
So I just showed up and said, hey, Donnell, I went to TC Williams, hooked me up with Five, and then he liked me, so I did the whole weekend with him.
Wait, and in Pittsburgh again?
In Pittsburgh, yeah.
You know I'm from there.
Really? Oh, so
yeah.
The Homestead Improv or whatever, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, right. I used to live in Shadyside, which is close by. Where did you stay?
My parents met in Shadyside.
That's so romantic. What restaurant?
Well, it was actually a blind date and it was a double date. My dad was in the Navy. And on the way home from the date, they hit black ice. The car hit a bank, was careening toward the median. And apparently my dad, in the mythos of it all, he grabbed my mom around the waist and saved her from shooting through the window. While he did that, he tore his ACL and MCL completely to shreds. And was laid up in the hospital for 6 weeks. And so my mom visited him in the hospital and eventually felt sorry enough for him to date him. To like go with him. Yeah.
Okay, wait.
It's a great story.
Is this a Casey Kasem long distance dedication?
It sounds like it, right?
That.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's an amazing story. Yeah. So were they on Fifth Avenue, Forbes?
Oh, gosh, where were they? I remember when I wanted to know where the accident happened because I thought I could take a picture and they didn't know exactly where it was, what street it was, but it was in Shadyside. I know that for sure.
Where were those guys living at the time?
I don't remember.
I mean, did they grow up in Pittsburgh?
No, my mom was there for a bit and my dad was, he was like a Navy guy visiting town with his buddy from.
Wow. Navy guy visiting town. Gets into a car, goes on. Was it like a blind date?
Yeah.
Then they're in the car accident.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of story right there.
My dad's knee is still completely messed up. And every time it pinches in pain, he goes, your mom. You know?
That sucks, man. The ACL is not a good one to mess up, right?
No.
Well, I hope you had a good time there. Yes?
I love it. It's beautiful. I don't know why the river looks like diarrhea flu bathroom water. But
wait, which river? You know, there are three.
The one that sounds like some weird.
The Monongahela.
Monongahela, yeah.
Monongahela.
Monongahela.
The Monongahela and the Allegheny reach together, converge mm-hmm. to form
Poo.
The Mississippi.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. The Ohio River.
It is the grossest color. In a river I've ever seen. You have to admit that, even though you're...
It is funny. And I remember I would water ski. This is not often by any means, but, somebody would take... This is more like in college. Somebody had a boat. We go, water ski, whatever. My buddy Jim Dillon had a boat. Anyway, and I remember like water skiing. It was just super fun and everything. And then I'd be in the water, you know, in the life jacket, and I'm sitting there with the skis on my feet. And I'm thinking to myself like, this water looks like shit, man. I mean, not so much when you're in it, but when you're out of it.
Yeah.
So when you're in it, you don't really see it and you feel okay. But you know that really in the back of your mind, when you were looking at it from over there or on the bridge or driving over, that water does look muddy.
And either way, it's not healthy. That water cannot be healthy. You don't want to get wet by that water.
No. Well, again, if you're from Pittsburgh and you drink Iron City beer three times a day, you know, Bill Dawes, you just don't get it, man. Hey, listen, you come forth today with the topic detained in Egypt, and that does sound harrowing. And I being detained in another country is why I love the series Locked Up Abroad so much. You know,
I thought about that the whole time I was locked up. I was hoping, there was a part of me that was thinking that would be pretty good press and this is a good story. And then part of me was thinking, if this escalates to a point where I could actually be a Locked Up Abroad story, then I'm in a lot of trouble.
Here's the thing I love about Locked Up Abroad is, like, first of all, it's all right there in the title.
Yeah.
We know how this is going to end. And we're cheering for them anyway, you know, like, oh, Jesus Christ, how could you be so stupid? You cannot put cocaine in the head of a Buddha statue and just walk into Thailand from Burma or whatever. Like, it's just, and you know where they're headed and you're just with them the whole time. You're like, oh, Jesus Christ, turn around, turn around. And I love it so much because I know where it's going. And I've traveled pretty extensively as well. And, I have carried edibles with me.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah.
Have you ever carried edibles? You can tell us.
Well, I was touring. Before this, I was touring around Europe with in Scandinavia with Maz Jabrani, who is a comic. I don't know if you know him.
Of course. Great comic. Yeah.
And when we were, and I had, and I just brought weed from LA. I just had like pre-rolls from LA all over my backpack.
Wait, as a carry-on.
Yeah, as a carry-on. So when I flew into the UK, I wasn't worried about it. And then I go to the UK, and then I go into Paris, and I'm not really worried about any of this. I go to Amsterdam. I get to Sweden. I still have it. I'm smoking at night. When I got to Oslo, Norway, I went into the theater there, and I think I was just backstage, and I took out a joint, and the guy was like, how the hell do you have a joint? It's like, oh, I've been traveling. He goes, do you realize how much trouble you'd get in Norway if you had a joint? And I'm thinking, for some reason, I'm thinking this is a socialist liberal country. They're going to be fine with a joint. I'm not, you know, smuggling enough to distribute. But apparently in places like, it's a mandatory jail sentence.
I absolutely didn't know that. I thought all over Europe, it was very, you know, cosmopolitan and no big deal.
No, the guy told me, I don't know if this is true, so don't quote me on this, but although I'm quoting myself here, apparently in Sweden, if you get caught with drugs, a joint or a gram, whatever, it's a 7-year mandatory drug sentence.
That's fascinating.
And I'm sure there are mitigating factors, but yeah, I had no, because Amsterdam is like, it's just everywhere and it's right around the corner basically. So in Norway, the guy, the promoter basically was like, I'll buy whatever you have off of you right now. Just because you have no idea the trouble that could happen. Like you will go to jail, period.
And did you ever look it up? Is that totally true? Or do you think he just wanted that weed?
I don't know about this, but I did look into it a little bit more and I found out that they're incredibly strict about drugs in Sweden and Norway. And it's considered the same way in Muslim countries, homosexuality is considered like verboten. Drugs are like that in Scandinavia, which I would never assume.
Right. I hear you. Interesting.
Even when I was on the street smoking weed, with people I knew, contemporaries and young people, they were like, what do you, oh my, like, it's wow. Not classy at all. It's not cool.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really interesting. I think that up in Sweden, I think it's like Party Time USA, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they drink like fish, but they haven't really evolved to the point where they think that weed is less damaging.
No, I didn't know that.
Denmark is a little bit different because they have issues with, Christiana and places where they're selling hash and weed out of like a private domain inside it. So Denmark has a little bit more of a liberal bent, but Sweden and Norway, you will go to jail with a joint.
What about our Finnish friends?
I imagine it's the same way. I don't think it's any different. I really don't.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm not going anywhere there anytime soon. But I bet it was definitely worth it to be with Maz Jobrani. That was fun, I bet, huh?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And you could smoke weed most places.
Yeah.
But not there.
Well, I would say I'll just hold off. That's the good news. That's the good news, though, really, with being a weed smoker like I am every day. And then I cough. no, but you know what I mean? Like I think that it I'm having a weed moment right now because I'm completely
forgetting
what we were talking about. Hang on a second.
The good thing about being a weed smoker is that you forget things when you laugh about.
That is so funny. No, I was going to say, oh, is that, no, it's true. Listen, like I'm not an alcoholic, but unlike alcohol where I understand you really could crave it and you physically need it. Weed, you can stop smoking it for a week, 2 weeks, a month, 3 months. And you're kind of like, that'd be nice to have, but so would a Snickers bar, you know, you could take it or leave it at some point. I don't have any kind of addiction to weed. I just have all the symptoms.
As you said, you smoke it every day. But it's true because you can smoke it every day and then go somewhere where you're not allowed to and it's fine.
You crack me up. I'm so, so happy you're on the show. I've been wanting you for a long time. I can't get over your IMDb credits, Bill. They just go on and on. 61 things on your IMDb. Really, it's really cool. You've done all sorts of stuff. And now you're involved in the story-worthy 10-year anniversary. Woo!
Yeah!
Woo-hoo. And today you bring forth the topic, like I said, detained in Egypt. So I'm really excited to talk about that. But before we do, I wanted to remind you guys to head over to storyworthypodcast.com because there you'll find the updated information about who's on the Story Worthy Hour of Power. Hooray! Every Sunday night, you guys, as you know, we're going on our 10th show, 6 p.m. Pacific time. Join anywhere in the world. It's a Zoom webinar. So we've kicked it up from the meeting. It's now a webinar. We've been having 5 storytellers, including me. So 4 storytellers, all from the Storyworthy podcast. So I know they're really good and they tell true stories in 1 hour. And it's just a blast. And then, as if that's not enough, we play Story Smash in the after show with Judge Blankapatch. And he is, as you know, outrageously funny. And last week, Mark DiCarlo joined him. We've just been laughing so hard. Bill, I can't wait for you to do the show. You have to do my Hour of Power.
I'd love to.
We're cracking up. And then Story Smash has just gotten ridiculous. I've just gotten it, you know, because I didn't want to do it wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, that show has been so successful at the Improv for just short of 3 years until this pandemic hit. You know, the pandemic.
The little pandemic.
Whatever. Anyway, and then, you know, of course, we've had to adapt and change our ways. And so Story Smash, I first tried it a couple of times with like my family and just playing with just 2-3 people, nobody. And I couldn't get it together. And I was like, if this isn't right, I'm not going to do it because I don't want people to look at it then and be like, this is what she's been talking about for 3 years. This sucks, man. But guess what? Now I've got curtains. I've got music. Join us, you guys. You'll see. Storyworthypodcast.com. All right, you guys. He's here right now. Bill Dawes. He's so funny. He is a 3-time Broadway veteran, which I'm so impressed by. I've just, being a Broadway star, I guess, because for me, it's extremely not tangible. Like, I don't see that. I don't see how that, I mean, I see how it happens, but I'm just, it's so foreign to me because I have no singing ability. And you know what I mean? Like, it just seems.
I don't have singing ability either. I've never sung on Broadway before.
Well, how did that happen?
Just plays. Every once in a while, there is a play that you can get to be a part of that does not involve singing. Yeah.
Oh, that is so interesting. Well, I should know that. I just saw To Kill a Mockingbird this past December.
With Jeff Daniels, yeah?
With Jeff Daniels, yeah. Ask me how I liked it.
Did you like it?
It was boring. Exhausting. It was like everybody was so overacting to me. It was like,
oh, yeah.
I come on down with my paw. my name is, what was her name? I can't remember. And I'm so, you know, she's supposed to be like 9, but she was like 34. And it was just, I was so annoyed. But everybody's like, oh my goodness, this is just,
oh yeah.
Oh, you know, very, very serious. And I'm just like, meh.
Yeah. Well, there's a thing that goes on in New York theater, because I was a New York theater guy for a long time. It's called dutiful boredom, which is where everyone goes and sees Shakespeare in the Park. Like, did you see Shakespeare? Did you see The Tempest in the Park? It was set in the 1930s. It was so amazing. And it's boring as fuck, because Shakespeare is boring as fuck, because out of context from the 1600s, it's not fucking interesting or funny. Or,
I know. I feel so I'm so happy you said that. And I have lived that way for, say, the last 20 years since I feel like I've gotten a hold of like who I am and stuff, that I could say to people, I won't go to Shakespeare in the Park. I'm sorry. I don't care for it. Yeah. Like, I don't even make an excuse. Yeah. I just say, no, thank you. Like, I can't do the Shakespeare thing. I don't care if it reflects on me poorly. I just can't do it.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. I mean, look, I love Hamilton. I think Hamilton is brilliant.
Yeah, me too.
But also, let's not forget that the reason Hamilton is so brilliant is because most musicals are garbage and unwatchable.
Exactly.
And for people, and for old Catskill Jews in Long Island who like want to come out and like, oh my, Edith, did you see the new musical?
Yeah.
It's just a lot of shitty stuff out there. I mean, I don't want to say shitty. It's just an antiquated art form for the most part, the way that musicals disseminate information and the way they tell stories. So, and that's why they keep redoing Carousel, redoing Chicago, and then Hamilton comes out and, you know, it's new, and rap is a great delivery system for information. Like, oh, wow, this is the new way to tell a story? That's fucking
awesome.
It's
so amazing. It really is. I've watched it once. My daughter's watched it 4 times so far on Disney. And check this out. One time, she's 13, as like a little summer project. Well, I had her do it last year too. And the year before that, I have her try to write, or not try, but I have her write to people that she admires or celebrities or, you know, whoever. So she wrote to Lin-Manuel Miranda and he wrote her back.
Of course he did. He's a mensch.
He wrote her back on his stationery in perfect writing. He mentioned her friends. It was amazing. So I just so grateful for him. And he really has. He's changed. He's changed musicals. It's a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. And also his director, Tommy Kail, they work hand in hand. And they're both probably two of the smartest people I've ever met.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. On Broadway, by the way, you were Mickey Mantle. Is that right? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you do look like a baseball player.
I don't know. I guess I remember when I got the role of Mickey Mantle, he was such a stud that I went on a hardcore workout regime. And I said, even if you don't like me as Mickey Mantle, and if I don't get the Oklahoma accent perfect, I want to look fucking jacked up in pinstripes.
That's awesome. Baseball. In fact, I look over, my apartment is over a baseball field, and it's a high school kids, but they're 18.
That sounds really creepy. Yeah, these 18 year old high school kids, go on.
And 19, and some of them are just so fit. Holy.
Yeah, Ghislaine Maxwell. Is that?
Well, look, I'm not saying I, but I will say I have binoculars right there, right over there. So you have been on television a lot, and you've done a lot of parts on stuff like Law and Order, Criminal Minds, Call of Duty, Rizzoli Isles. It's just so much stuff. And also you've done a lot of, well, again, it's how you look. I think a lot of it is, you know, the soap operas, like All My Children. Yes.
Yeah, I did. But here's the funny thing. When I first got out of, this is going to tie into our story, I believe.
I can't wait.
When I first got out of school, you know, when you're a skinny blonde / redhead kid coming out of school, fair-skinned, the roles that you're up for, and also pretty hair. I mean, this goatee I have right now is a quarantine goatee. It took me about a month to grow, 2 months to grow. Every role I was up for was really, you know, a gay guy.
Interesting.
So in my head, I'm thinking, I'm this athlete, I'm the stud, and everyone in New York is like, can you play this homosexual boy? Can you play this, like, male prostitute? So, anyway, I'm saying that because I played on All My Children, One Life to Live. I was actually the first gay marriage on television.
Wow. Wow, that's kind of cool. That's amazing.
It was like 2004, and it was going to be a big deal. And gay marriage was getting some steam in 2004, and then George Bush put the kibosh on it. And then so ABC put the kibosh on it as well. Oh. There was supposed to be this big elaborate wedding, and it just became like a sort of a side story.
Did they kill you?
No, but basically the way that the wedding was handled, it was me and the father, I'm going to get married, and we love each other, and blah, blah, blah. And then 3 episodes later, it was a recurring role. I was like, yeah, Dad, we got married, and we're going to go on vacation. And then you never saw my character again. So for some reason, they're really building it. And then they just said, because the tide had to. It's so crazy to think that in 2005, 2006.
Gay marriage was the thing.
Like, no way.
Oh, my God. I can't wait for this generation to. Well, I shouldn't say that. I have a lot of elderly friends. But I'm telling you, some of these white Republican, these guys, we just have to turn this over. Have you ever played a character that gets killed, like, you know, an actor in the film, and then, you know, you're out?
Yeah.
I guess you've done that a lot. Has there ever been anything like dramatic or something funny we should know?
Here's the funny story. I was doing Law and Order with Anthony Anderson and Jeremy, what's his name? Jeremy Scipio, what's his name? He was in Six Feet Under. Jeremy Sisto?
I don't know.
I think Jeremy Sisto and Anthony Anderson.
I love Anthony Anderson.
He's one of the funniest human beings in the world.
Love him.
And I was a corpse at one point. I was a fire marshal who gets killed. And so I'm lying on the slab, you know, on the gurney, and they come in and
wait, did you die in the fire?
No, I get killed.
Well, how? You could tell us, dude. It's not a big spoiler.
I don't remember. I mean, it was, I only had like 2 scenes and then I'm killed. So it's one of those things where I'm like, hey agent, should I really do this fucking part? But I did it. And I had a scene where I'm on in the, whatever the room is where they have the dead people in the steel slabs. So I'm lying there like Cold Stone Creamery slabs, and I'm lying there and, you know, have a towel over him just like this. And you have to hold your breath, basically.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, you're playing dead, Bill.
So whenever you see dead people, I'm saying like, but sometimes you have to hold your breath for a long time.
So what is the cue? Is it just action? And you go,
absolutely. Just as flat footed and as dumb as you think it would be. Yeah. So meanwhile, I'm there with Anthony Anderson and Jeremy Sisto, and they're just trying to make me fucking break.
Oh my God. That'd be impossible.
Saying like dumb shit and like improvising. And I'm just sitting there like, because they know that I've got to play a fucking corpse. And every time I smile, look at the smile. I was like, these motherfuckers.
That is such a funny joke.
And your eyes are closed too. So they would just do like little, like, oh, this motherfucker, like little, they would say little things that only I could hear.
That's funny, man. I love those moments when it's so funny you literally cannot stop laughing. That's a blast.
And for shows like I found like the Special Victims Unit and Law and Order, it's such dark subject matter that everyone on set is a crack up. Everyone has to be super funny because you can't walk around like I'm thinking about all the dead, murdered, rape victims. All about like, hey, you want to go to my little league son's baseball game and blah, 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 you know.
That is so funny. You know, I got to go to this rap party. It wasn't a rap party, but it was a celebration for this soap opera's 40 years in the business on. It just happened in the spring. It just happened before COVID. It was one of the last big things I went to. It was over on the lot and it was on the stage. It was from his name will come to me. I just read his book, by the way. He's supposed to come on the show. He turned 80 as well. He's a huge soap star. I can't remember his name. Darn it. Anyway, when I was on that set, what they did was they had shot that morning and then the party started. So everybody was there. They were all much older people because they've been all been on that show for 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
They've been on that show that long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And once you're on soap opera, I mean, it's just a 9-to-5 job. You might as well be an accountant in Tupelo. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's the same job. They don't have, there's no glamour or glitz or they don't feel fancy. They just show up and they have Subarus.
They have, it's like a factory job, really. It would be like a factory job.
Yeah.
And his name was Eric Braeden. There you go. Eric Braeden.
Got it.
Very interesting guy, but not as interesting as you, Bill Dawes. You guys, let's get to Bill Dawes' story. You can find him over at his website, BillDawes.com, and also over on Twitter at Bill Dawes. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Bill Dawes.
Okay, so I was at a comedy festival in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. This is literally a year ago. I mean, I'm talking within, this is Tuesday, so this happened on a Saturday a year ago. There was a festival they're trying to open to the West, because I guess when the princess is dating, not a Kardashian, but is dating some American celebrity, so all of a sudden Jeddah's like, we're going to be open to the West. And they had a big festival, and there were supposed to be musicians and all these people. And a lot of people canceled because they're like, we're not going to go and support a country that subjugates women and tortures, you know, women, you know. So, but I went because I was getting paid. But my gig in Jeddah got canceled. It was through the Laugh Factory. There's some issues there, and I was canceled. So I'm stranded in Jeddah with nothing to do.
Oh my God!
So you know, after you walk around Jeddah for a day or two, you're kind of like, well, all right, this is fun. Get me the fuck out of Jeddah. So an hour away is Cairo, and I'm thinking, perfect. I get to go to Egypt. I get to see the pyramids. That is a bucket list item. I think most people in the world in America go, that's one of those buckets. It's on our fucking dollar bill. Why wouldn't you? It's a cheap flight from Jeddah to Cairo. So I left really early that morning, got to Egypt, and the process of getting through Egypt and customs, it's ridiculous. Just paying everyone hand over, you know, it's all a scam there, right? The Egyptian industry and economy is completely tourism based. They have no oil. They have no thing they're outputting. There's no product they're creating. It's all like, look at our sphinxes and our pyramids. That's all Egypt is about. So I hired a tour guide.
But they have the markets and stuff. So they have like a whole, like a something to do in Egypt, right? Isn't there?
Yeah, I will say this, and I don't want to quote Trump and say it was a shithole country, but it was, as you're driving around Cairo in the taxi. And so the guy, you know, I hired this tour guide and I said, I want to go to the museum and then go to the pyramids. So he's driving around and I'm like, oh my God, here I am. It's Egypt. It's amazing. And I think in your head, you have this idea that it's a romanticized idea that Egypt is, I don't know what, everyone's belly dancing or walking like an Egyptian, none of that shit. It's just, it looks like it's been bombed for the past 50 years. As a matter of fact, all the tops of every building, they're not even finished because there is a tax loophole. If you own a building there and you don't finish it, you don't have to pay taxes on it. So every building is unfinished. And it literally looks like, are we in Syria? What's going on? In my head, I thought Arab Spring, Egypt had this renaissance and it had somehow flourished into some sort of like pseudo democracy because I don't follow the news. And the problem with the news is that when something good happens, you don't hear about the retraction, right? You hear about once a genie's out of the bottle, like, oh my God, Egyptian Arab Spring. And then you realize that Egypt has slid back into the Muslim Brotherhood 100%, just as bad as Saudi Arabia. So I don't know that I'm thinking, oh, Egypt and Morocco and sexy. I'm going to like, you know, bang an Egyptian mummy or something. So I go to the museum and the museum is crazy because there's so much stuff in the museum, the Egyptian museum, that they just have like sarcophagi and mummies and sphinxes like lying on the floor, like in bubble wrap, like, oh, we'll get to this later. And meanwhile, it's like 8,000 years old. You're like, what the fuck? This is crazy. I mean, literally just like stuff everywhere. Like we don't have places to put it. So that was interesting. And then, but we're running late. We have to get to the pyramids because they close at 5 and we get there around, I don't know, maybe 3:30. And whenever I've thought about the pyramids, I don't know if you have you been there, by the way?
No, I haven't. But my sister was. My mom was.
Whenever you want.
I remember there was a Burger King very close by.
Well, that's a thing. Whenever you think about the pyramids and you look at it in the movies, even modern movies like Nick Cage and National Treasure. Oh, we have to go to Egypt. And like they're on a fucking camel. Like, oh, it's just 10 lengths over the Valley of the Kings. No, you don't get there on a camel in a desert. You get there in a Kia in a parking lot. Literally, the parking lot is a stone throw from the pyramids. You can drive out the parking lot, throw a rock and hit the fucking pyramids. So I don't know why everyone's always getting there on a camel and shit. It's a complete, so I get that. I'm like, oh, interesting. Cause you're driving through Cairo and you get to Giza And in the middle of like just a really kind of, I don't know how else to put it, just like a gross, war-torn looking country, you see the pyramids, you're like, oh my God, this is really amazing. And you get there and the tour guide says, listen, he goes, I have to tell you, when you get there, be careful. And he speaks good English because he goes to the university. He said, be careful of the street vendors. They will rob you. And I'm thinking, well, what do you mean they'll rob me? Like with a gun or a knife, like rob me? Like you mean pickpocket or rob me? So, and they just said, be careful. Don't let them come near you. They give you a real warning. So I said, okay. And you get there. And I would say when I went there, it was a Saturday a year ago, maybe because of the heat, whatever it was, there weren't a lot of tourists there. And I was, when I first got there, I was the only white person I saw there. Not that that matters, but it might play into the story a little bit. There were street vendors everywhere selling wares. It's like, hey, come, you know, come here. I have to show you something type of, okay. I was warned. So I'm by myself and my tour guide, and he's talking to people. I'm walking around. I kind of climb up on the pyramids. You can kind of climb up on the first few blocks of the pyramids. I don't know if it's legal or not. I saw a couple other people doing it. I did it. At one point, a cop blew a whistle at me, like, don't do it. I actually have that video on my Instagram. So there was a couple there. There was a white couple, and they were from Europe. I'm guessing some goofy country like Amsterdam or Denmark or something like that. So me, you know, being like, okay, this is someone I can talk to these people. At least they'll understand English. And they did a little bit. And I said, can you take a video of me? Oh, can you take a picture of us? We'd go back and forth. And then they took a video of me up on the pyramids. I come back, get my phone. As I'm walking away, I hear like, oh, look, I hear like, ah, ha, 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 or whatever. I turn around and this guy is kind of grabbing at this woman's purse or at her hand, right? So I'm thinking it's a street vendor, naturally. So I turn around and I go, and I'm thinking, whatever, I'm thinking I'm a big, bad American, whatever the hell, savior complex I have. And I go, hey, 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 and I grab the guy's forearm. And literally when I grab his forearm, it was like something exploded. Because all of a sudden there are like five or six street vendors like, oh, what, what? And they're like yelling at me, like, get away. And I'm moving back, like, what do I do? And they're just kind of coming after me. They leave this couple alone. And the couple kind of saunters off. I don't see them again. So my thought is, as this is happening, I'm going, oh, this is a setup. Well, I didn't think this at first. I'll tell you what happened. What happened is a guy comes up who goes, he goes, give me a passport, passport. And I'm like, I'm not going to give you my passport. And I see his gun. They have the guns. They're all in plain clothes. All the cops are plain clothes cops. And they look just like the street. There's no difference between the way they look and the way the street vendors look. He has a gun tucked into his waistband in the back. And I go, okay, fine. So I give him my passport. He's going to look it over. He goes with a group of people and they're all in a circle looking at my passport. And I still feel safe. My tour guide is there. I'm an American citizen. I'm like, nothing bad is going to happen to me, right? They talk for a bit and then they go, give me your phone. So I'm thinking maybe the video of me climbing on the pyramids, but like I said, the first couple blocks, maybe that's a crime. I don't know, but I'm fine. Right. I give them the phone. They're like, passcode. I give them the passcode. They're looking through my phone. About 5-10 minutes later, there's still people talking, pointing to me. Nobody's speaking English to me. Not a single person there speaking English. They go, come with us. Come. They put me in the back of a police car. They drive me down to the precinct, which is just at the base of the pyramids. So it's close, right? You can see the pyramids from the windows of the precinct. So I'm still feeling okay. I'm sitting, I'm waiting. Then a guy shows up, very charming, like kind of detective. He goes, hey, how you doing? I'm like, oh, thank God. I go, hey, man. He goes, so. And he looks, he has my phone. He goes, so, and he shows me a picture of me with my ass out in front of a beef eater at Buckingham Palace. I have a thing on my Instagram at Bill Dawes, which was just a silly thing that took off where I would go around the country and like moon things, right? So I'm in front of Buckingham Palace and my pants are down and there's a beef eater standing there and And I just thought it was funny. And it would. So he goes, so what's this about? I go, oh, and I'm laughing. Oh, it's funny because, you know, it's just like, and then he does another one. And there's one where I'm on the top of Mammoth Mountain, I'm mooning. There's probably the Andy Warhol Museum, I'm mooning. There's like six or seven photos of my butt out. And I'm just going like, oh, it's just kind of, it's an art project I'm doing. It's kind of funny. And he said, and this is might be where I made the mistake. He goes, do you have a picture like this in front of the pyramids? And I said, either I said, not yet, or I don't know. He goes, where are you going to take a picture like this in front of the pyramids? And I think I probably said, I don't know, maybe. Because what difference did it make, right? There was nothing there. There's nothing posted. Why would it matter if I go, oh, I don't know, maybe. He goes, huh, okay. I go, I don't know. I know. It's just something I do. He goes, where are you playing? Dude, I said, I don't think so. Ah, maybe like that. He goes back. I'm getting relocated all these different rooms around the precinct. And finally, I get to see the top general, who's like in this like Captain Crunch outfit, you know, with the shoulder pads and the hat and whatever the hell it is. He looks like he's with the Scientology Sea Org. And everyone there's chain smoking. I'm just chain smoking. Yeah. They're just looking at you chain smoking. They have no computers, no laptops. Everyone, there's just scribes. And they have like that cowhide print composition notebook, like my first day of third grade notebook. And you talk about, and they're just writing nonstop on these. So the guy's like, hala, 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 and the guy's like writing. And he's looking at me, hala, hala. Minutes, hours of just this. And I'm going, what am I? And I'm thinking, how am I going? I still feel safe. There's air conditioning. There's a room. There's people around. They're smiling at me. And then all of a sudden people on their phones and I'll hear, I did a video, how a white man says the N-word to a black man that got viral and they're playing that video. And I'm going, and they're watching the video, just no expression, no smile, no laughter. Meanwhile, it's a hilarious video. And then they're listening to my podcast. Let's do a podcast interview with Jay Moore. There's going through my stand-up, all this stuff. And I'm going, wow, this is, no laughter. So I'm thinking like whatever the humor is that I'm doing online is lost on them and a lot of people. But I'm still thinking this is fine, right? They're nice. They're like, you want some water? You want some tea? And I'm cool. I'm like, hey, let me have a cigarette. I'm like, I'll bond with these guys. And they're smiling. I think it's cool. Now, of course, you realize that the whole like nice guy, good cop, bad cop thing is real and that people are nice to you and they could also slice your head off at any moment. So eventually, as I'm there for hours, I'm waiting. And no one really speaks English. There's that one detective who speaks English and everyone else like, why, what am I waiting for? They're like, oh, hold on. Don't worry. They kept saying, don't worry. Then it's nighttime. Cause I got there, it was around 4 PM. So it's just, someone's getting ready to set. Right. They put me in the back of a police truck and they have two guys on either side of me, thugs, you know, guns, faces like bulldogs, guns tucked in their waistband next to me. And we drive out of, through the back entrance of the pyramids, we go out into the main city, the main street of Giza, and we're driving.
Okay, is your interpreter with you? Is that guy with you? Your tour guide?
At this point, he's with me still, yes. So
now he's not detained, right?
I don't know if he's officially detained or what, but he's with me. Maybe they brought him along to see if he was a part of whatever I was a part of, right? So we're driving and we pass. I'm like, oh, they're going to take me to like the big jail or the prison or whatever the thing is that you go from precinct to booking, like they would have in America. And they keep passing different prisons, different places, keep driving. It's darker and darker. Eventually we go into the city. It's called 6th of October City, which is probably about an hour plus outside of Giza, an hour and a half, maybe.
Will you say that name one more time?
6th of October City. Cause I saw a sign for it minutes before we pulled up, and we pull into a suburban street that's desolate. And you know, suburban streets in Egypt, they don't have street lamps, right? It's just dark, but there's nothing around other than these houses. And we pull up to this kind of dilapidated house that's just made of stone, and it has like a, it's not really, it's more like a warehouse. It has like a wrought iron gate in front of it, and there are two guys with machine guns, like Planet of the Apes, you know, those with the curved handles stand. And I'm like, I'm not handcuffed. Everyone's smiling in front of me. Don't worry. I'm fine, right? I'm thinking. I get out of the car. It's nighttime. They open the gate. It's like, I walk into this building. It's like these stone steps, and literally, it looks like a horror film is going to take place here. There's just PVC piping everywhere, literally like water dropping from the ceiling, a flickering fluorescent light tube, and I walk up five flights of steps, and I'm going, where the fuck am I? Because I will say this, I'm certain wherever I was is a place where they interrogate and question and probably torture and murder people. I didn't hear screaming, but it just had the feeling of a very dark desert pipe in the middle of nowhere that was just cement. We come to the fifth floor. I sit down on like a cinder block and I'm waiting. And it's the thugs, another guy, a guy with a little Captain Crunch outfit, and my interpreter. And my interpreter won't talk to me because he's pissed as fuck that he's there, that he got dragged into this. Finally, I go into this room with three, they're apparently the three top persecutors, chief prosecutors in Cairo. And now again, air conditioning, bathroom, carpet. I'm like, okay, I'm safe. And these guys speak English. I'll be fine. They question the interpreter a bit and then they let him go. And he just like leaves like shaking his head. He was just pissed. And then again, same thing. They're looking at my pictures and they're like, they were literally like flip through, see a picture of me mooning something. And they go, for what? For what? Why? For what? And I would say, you just laughed. So it's funny. And they're like, for what? For why do you do? I go, because it's a funny thing. Beef eater, England, palace, my butt, ha ha. And they just didn't understand the concept of me taking. And they said, when are these pictures coming out of you in the pyramids? And I said, there are no pictures of me in the pyramids. They said, you didn't send it. Now, here's the thing. They have no Wi-Fi in Egypt. Or if they do, it's so bad. It's like 1998 DSL, like that they just don't have access to the internet in the same way. So I'm sure they're thinking something has been posted and we can't find it yet. And it will take a while to upload. So they basically are telling me we have to wait and see if anything comes out on YouTube or whatever social media. And meanwhile, they're looking at my Instagram, we're like, ooh, verified. Ooh, he verified. Verified? Ooh, he verified. So it was a big deal, apparently, that I was verified. In my head and looking back, I'm thinking they probably thought it's like they can't just kill me because I'm verified. That's the only benefit I've ever had from being verified, is these Egyptian guys weren't going to kill me. Now, here's what's weird about here, and I'll try to pick up the story a little bit, but so I'm there hours, question. And every time I'd cross my legs, and this is when I should have been smart and realized what was going on. Every time I'd cross my legs while I was sitting, the guy would like literally knock my leg off my other leg. Like, don't. I go, I don't know if it's disrespectful. I'm not showing the bottom of my foot, which I know is a thing in the Middle East. But every time, and I'm there for 4 hours. So every time I'd cross my legs, they kept knocking my legs apart. I go, okay, whatever. Finally, they say, okay, go outside and wait and we'll discuss. So I wait for another hour, you know, with these people, guns, just sitting there. No one's talking. I come back in. And they go, we decided to charge you. You've been arrested and we've decided to charge you. And I'm going, what the fuck is it? He said, what am I charged for? And he said, disturbing the peace, assaulting an officer. So apparently the guy whose arm I grabbed was an officer. It's a certain, not a street vendor. So certain bees assaulting the officer. And I think there was indecent or something else, like indecent exposure or something. I forget what it was. Even though that didn't, he goes, we're going to charge you 10,000 Egyptian pounds. So I go, oh my God, 10,000. I don't know. $600. So I'm like, okay, thank God I can do $600. So they go, once you pay the $600, you are free to go. They said, but if you come back to Egypt, we will be tried for your crime. You'll have to go to court. So basically, it was a way of banning me from Egypt without banning me. I'm like, thank you so much. I'm sorry. And one of the prosecutors there, he said, you know, if you had a picture of you with like that in front of the pyramids, we would have sliced it off.
Oh my!
And I go,
God.
I go, what? I go. And at this point, I've been laughing the whole time, making jokes and thinking they like me. I go, come on, what do you mean slice off my butt? And he goes, yeah. I go, come on, no, you wouldn't. He goes, oh yes. I go, huh? And then in my head, I'm going like, would I have to stand up with no butt? Like, what would that be like? What if I didn't have a butt? I'll get back to that later. So I go back to the precinct. there's a bank right by the precinct, a 24-hour banking system connected to America. So I'm like, okay, this is all a fucking shakedown. This is what they do. They shake down tourists. They get $600 for Egypt is like the gross national product of fucking, you know, whatever. So I paid the money and I go back to the precinct. I'm sitting in the precinct. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to wait to be released. And I wait. And I wait. And I wait. Meanwhile, they haven't fed me. I'm drinking tap water from the Nile, which is probably worse than the Mahangahale River in Pittsburgh. This is gross. Oh, the majestic Nile. Really? The majestic Nile? You know how many dead bodies? Like, that's where they put their dead bodies. It's the, probably the grossest river in the world. So, but I'm drinking tap water from the Nile. This is not, and you can just, you can taste the silt, the death in it. No food. And I'm waiting. And now your brain's starting to go like, woo, you're starting to go a little crazy. And I keep, every time I go, why am I here? When do I go? And at one point I was literally thinking, I'm just going to try to walk out, like sneak out and get out of here. But every time, because they weren't really paying attention, it's like there's people moving papers and blah, blah, blah. And every time I would get up, they'd go, like, go, sit down. And I was sitting in the corner. So not in a cell, but I was sitting in the corner of the precinct. There was a cell with like young guys, like you'd see like in the darkness, their hands coming around the bars. And then I would see guys like the officers like looking at their phone and then pointing to me and laughing. And I'm thinking, I wonder why are they laughing at my butt pics, my stand up or whatever it is. I have no idea. I'm losing my mind. Meanwhile, this is a weekend, so the embassy's closed, right? I have to wait till Monday morning because it was a Saturday. When I have to wait till Monday morning to call the embassy. And I finally call, I'm like, I don't have a phone either, right? Because they've taken my phone. So I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm like, how do I call the embassy? And finally a guy comes by. This is a Monday night, probably. This is how long it's been. It was Saturday night I was interrogated. I was arrested at like 3, 4 p.m. Saturday afternoon. So this is now Monday night. And the guy's coming in. He goes, he looks at me. And meanwhile, like I'm the only white person within miles of this area and definitely in the precinct, in that precinct in Giza, I'm for sure the only white person who's probably been there for years. Who knows? And I'm sitting there and the guy looks at me like double take. Like, he goes, what are you here for? What are you here for? And I go, I don't know, man. It's crazy. I have no idea. They think I've done something. They think I took pictures and they're waiting to see if these pictures. And they go, what? I go, they think I took a picture of me mooning the pyramids and I don't, but they have my phone. And he goes, I'll help you. So he gets on the phone. I hear him talking for a while. And he goes, look, I got on the phone with the top lawyer in Egypt. He was the lawyer for President Mubarak. Now, because I'm an American, I'm an ignorant of history, particularly any history that does involve America. I didn't realize that President Mubarak basically fucking lost and got fucking exiled from the country. So who knows how good this lawyer is? Anyway, I'm like, that sounds fancy. So yeah, I go, I hire him. Can he come down here? And he goes, okay. I go, can I call the embassy too? He lets me, he's like, okay, but be careful, you know, like people, you know. So I borrow his phone. I call the embassy. He calls the embassy for me. I call him. And the embassy's like, yeah, just sit tight. And I'm going, what do you mean sit tight? I've been here since Saturday afternoon. It's now Monday evening. Like I can't just sit tight, like get me out of here. And they're like, well, we can't do anything. You just have to wait, let the process. And I'm going, I'm an American. What the, you know, you think that your passport gives you this like crazy golden immunity anywhere, but it really fucking doesn't. Cause they were like, we can't do anything. Okay. So finally the guy goes, someone from his office is going to come down and we'll get you out of here. We'll take no problem. We'll take care of nowhere. I'm waiting. Finally, Tuesday morning comes along. A guy shows up, very like kind of weird guy, looks like a little bird. He goes, beep. I go, yeah, Bill, come here. He goes, I go, what am I doing? How am I getting out of here? And he goes, huh? I go, how am I? And he goes, oh. And he takes his phone and he has like a little translating system. And he type, and he goes, I go, when am I getting out? He goes, oh. And I shit you not, this really happened. He types something, he gives it back to me, and it says, look at all the walnuts. So now I'm thinking, whatever he said was translated to me as, look at all the walnuts. So I'm thinking I'm fucked for life. I'm never getting out of here. I'm like, the guy, the lawyer I hired doesn't speak English at all. And we're going through this knockoff of Google Translate. It was like some Chinese knockoff brand, like Mahewi or whatever. Look at all the wall. And I was like, what? Like, doesn't make sense. And he's like, oh. And then he wrote back, like, these people are nuts. So, okay, got it. There's a little bit. So he says, finally, there's going back and forth. I have no idea what's going on. They say they have to deport me. I go to immigration. They want to take me back to the precinct, process more paperwork, do more quote unquote research. Basically what happens, the translator comes back and he tells me, this is what happened. This is where it all gets interesting. 5 months previous, I believe it was a Danish couple, they went to the pyramids at night. They climbed up to the top of the pyramids. They fucked on the pyramids, did a video and a photo shoot of them naked and fucking on the pyramids. They left, they got away with it, and they posted it on the internet and on YouTube. And the Egyptian government has been in a lather ever since. So the guy who did it looks a little bit like me. So now we have these Americans or Europeans showing up. They've apparently been on high alert. And if you look on Egypt, on like websites, like people being arrested left and right because they're just on, they're so humiliated by that happening. And the guy said, you're in a difficult position because this just happened and Egypt has been furious about this. And now you're bearing the brunt of it because they're worried that you uploaded something. And because there's no Wi-Fi, they had to wait. So apparently what happened, I found out later, is that my case, quote unquote, after I was dismissed, it went up the temple of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the clerics, whatever it had, said, no, we got to find out more about it. Now, here's where it gets interesting, too. While I was detained, right after I was detained, articles were being released in Egyptian newspapers that you can actually Google. If you Google U.S. tourists arrested in Giza, arrested in Cairo, just U.S. tourists arrested in Cairo, these articles will come up. And I didn't start reading this till the interpreter was showing me this stuff. And it said a U.S. tourist was caught in the process of taking his pants down. Or trying to take his pants down to do a naked selfie in front of the pyramids. Now, I don't know how I could do a naked selfie in front of the pyramids. And they said he was, the U.S. tourist, a homosexual, was taking these pictures to lure other homosexuals on Facebook. So the whole thing was a witch hunt about my alleged homosexuality. So they just assumed that these pictures, that all my pictures of my butts were just me as a gay man cruising the world trying to get some man ass. There's nothing funny about it. And that there are literally 5 or 6 articles, if you look online, about me cruising Egypt for some dick. They're like, the investigators discovered that this guy came on a 1-day pass for the sole purpose of procuring gay sex near the pyramids. And what's funny about this is my ticket from Jeddah to Cairo was just a one-way ticket. Because I figured, okay, I'll figure out. Which to them, of course, also looks incriminating. That I show up by myself in a one-way ticket.
Why didn't you get a round trip?
Because I was not going to go back to Jeddah. After there, I was probably going to go to France.
I see.
Go to Paris. And the tickets were like, maybe 250 one way. So it wasn't great.
Yeah.
Anyway, they ended up having to deport me. And then they bring me to the airport police and I'm detained there. And meanwhile, at this point, it's been 48 hours. I'm thinking, this is like midnight, whatever that midnight run or midnight express. Like I'm just trapped. I have no idea what the fuck. And they finally go, okay, fine. You can go. They give me my passport, not my phone, just my passport. And they go and I'm walking towards my flight. Like how the fuck is this happening?
Yeah.
So I ended up talking to the lawyer and basically it turns out that they were convinced I had taken a video or a photo and that I was going to humiliate the Egyptian government by posting it. And I started looking into a lot of it after that. And all these people are getting arrested for like showing their tits in front of Karina Nefertiti, and a belly dancer who just posted a sexy photo got detained for 5 days. They're really on the lockdown right now in Egypt. But luckily I got out, you know?
All right. So, Bill Dawes, what have we learned?
I guess the thing that I learned the most is that whenever you're going to another country, brush up on the local politics and brush up on what the cultural trends are. Because, in, like I said, in my head, because I'm a dumb American, I didn't realize that Egypt was really ensconced in the Muslim Brotherhood. And I don't know if people realize this, but homosexuality is illegal in 10 out of 18 Muslim countries, and it's punishable by death in 6 out of 18. And as a matter of fact, even the 10 out of 18 where it's legal, it's not punishable, quote unquote, punishable by death, but they still kill homosexuals and get away with it because there's no one who to advocate for them. Mm-hmm. So basically, two-thirds of Muslim countries will kill gay people or imprison them for life or like torture them and rape them.
It's just so antiquated. It's crazy.
Yeah. And of all the things that people are freaking out about, that's why I get I take a little bit umbrage when people go, oh, fucking America. It's like, spend 48 hours in Egypt because there are pictures on your phone with your ass cheeks out where people are trying to condemn you and imprison you for homosexuality based on that.
Yeah.
When it's good old fashioned American comedy.
It's really, it's really, really upsetting for sure. It's a whole nother world when you go overseas. You just really have to respect where you're at. And now you know.
Well, if I were to go back to Saudi Arabia, if I were to go back to, because another thing that happens, I have a dick pic on my phone as well. Now, I'm not in the process of doing, but like it's an old dick pic from, I don't know. You know, when dick pics were new, when they're the hot new thing to do in 2010, they're new on the scene, like you had a dick pic. So I still had a dick pic in my phone somewhere. And at one point, they said, what's this? And it was my dick. And they're like, I go, it's mine. And they didn't understand the concept of why I would have a picture of my dick on my phone. They assumed it was someone else's dick.
Yeah. Well, now the evidence is starting to build up.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I had,
and look at me. I'm a blonde.
I had a friend once who was driving through Utah and happened to have, he owned a gun and it had gotten jammed and it was in the trunk. And so it was loaded. It was in the trunk. He was taking it to the place. And then he also had, or maybe it was in the back seat, now that I think of it. And then he also had, or his girlfriend had weed in her briefcase or something. And so they get pulled over in Utah and they have a loaded weapon and drugs, you know?
Yeah.
And they got banned from Utah. You know, at the end of the day, they got banned from Utah for, I don't know, a life. I don't know. It's ridiculous. There's so many things I want to touch on real quick here. Have you ever been to Rome?
I have been to Rome, yes.
Yeah, so the Colosseum is the same way. It's right on the freeway.
Yeah, yeah. But there's something about the Colosseum being on the freeway that makes it even cooler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the Colosseum was a part of a bustling metropolis back then.
Yeah,
the day.
And it is like a stadium, as it were.
Yeah.
And there are some gardens in front of it. But I always thought that was funny how
yeah, for sure.
There. And then you were something about an obscure country in Europe. I was thinking about Luxembourg. I don't know why. and then also I have a friend from Greece. And she says that there's a tax loophole there, something about if you find something on your property, a bone or a structure or something Grecian, and they get it certified, well, then your house is now like completely
blocked off. A national landmark.
Yeah, and you can't touch, nobody can touch it, nobody can take it away from you, and you get a tax reduction for not like touching anything that your house is sitting on, because it could be sitting on like a city or something, I don't know.
Wow, that's crazy.
I know. It's weird to think. Okay, and then the other thing is, I fucking hate getting scammed. Like, it bothers me more than anything getting scammed. And it happened to me in Istanbul. Have you been to Istanbul?
I have not.
It's the same thing where they're all in on it. Everybody, as soon as you get out of the cab or wherever you're coming in from, the subway, as soon as you get off, you're a target. No matter what, whether you're a blonde, some, you know, the paleness of our skin, whatever, and they are ready to hustle you. And it is really hard to discern because they turn you upside down. They create disturbances. They create crimes. And then you step up and it's just fucking horrible.
Yeah, to this day, I don't know if the two people that I thought were European, I don't know if they were in on it or not. It was very weird because they were gone.
Yeah, they disappeared. Sure, they were. Yeah, they were. Here's a real quick travel tip, and this is actually what happened in Istanbul. You never get a taxi that's not at a taxi stand or a taxi like from a hotel valet. You don't just pick up a taxi. Because what they'll do is they'll drop you off not in front of your hotel, but past your hotel where there's no security or cameras. And then that's where the scam goes down and they exchange money with you and the money, they turn around. They say, no, this is not enough. And you do this and that. And then you just want to get the fuck out of the cab. So you give them all your money.
Yeah.
Is essentially what happens. So you always go with the hotel valets, have them get you a cab. And the same with when you're in the business district, only get the cabs from the verified places, even if it's more money. Otherwise, you're going to get ripped off, brother. Going to get ripped off. Yeah, wow. It's really shocking. By the way, why is there a pyramid on our bill? It's a great question.
I don't really know. I mean, I know that people say it has something to do with the Illuminati and the Freemasons and that, you know, there's a lot of weird conspiracy theories about it because it's the pyramid with the eye.
The eye, right. So that seems very Egyptian.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what it means. I mean, I know there's lots of theories about the Illuminati, but I guess, I don't know. It's a really good question.
You know, if only there were some sort of machine where we could, you know, Google this word we speak of.
Yes, I know. I don't know.
Hey, listen, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really, that was a fabulous story. I was like on the edge of my seat.
Well, it's crazy. I haven't really told it that much. So when I saw your story, I was like, I got to tell this story somewhere. I talked about it on my podcast, but I've never really – and things have been dawning on me and been revealed to me since then. I told that story just about what was really going on and why and just how sort of – I don't think people realize in other countries because we're so in the middle of hating America. I don't think they realize like the world is in a pretty shitty place overall. And there are a lot of places that we romanticize and tend to think are better, exotic, more interesting. And the truth is the pyramids are profoundly uninteresting. I hate to say it, but you get there and you kind of like, oh, okay, like the history. Well, okay. But there's nothing about the pyramids that's majestic or leaves you breathless or it's not, and everything around is
like, do they do like a laser light show on the side or anything like that?
Yeah, that might, I don't think so. That might make it better. But I guess I thought, you know, now we're at the point in the world where everything has been so tread over and so discovered and rediscovered that it's hard to go anywhere and have it feel that you're discovering something ancient or, you know, majestic because it's all just like, hey, come here, buy a watch, you know, and, you know, and there's it's just really look what's happening with gay rights and women's rights in Middle Eastern countries. It's astonishing how awful gay people and women are being treated, and no one is doing a thing about it.
Yeah, it's as if they have no knowledge that there's another world out here. Or it's like it's so weird to be demonized as a Western civilization. It's so strange because I want to say like, no, you guys, it's a lot better.
Yes. Yes. You know? So a lot of these people right now, a lot of the Karens, a lot of these people out there right now, I kind of feel like saying, hey, yeah, just go to Egypt and do one wrong thing.
Yeah.
By the way, here's a funny story about this as a footnote. I had my backpack with me the whole time and they never removed me from my backpack. Right. My backpack had weed in it.
Whoa. Get out of here.
Yeah. Now, probably like a half a joint in my backpack just because I travel around on it so much. But yeah, there was weed in my backpack. They never checked my backpack, which is so weird. So, which goes to show they just were like, gay man, we must find out how gay he is and implicate him. And that's why if you look, like I said, just Google U.S. tourists arrested in Cairo last year, this time literally a year ago, exactly that's 1 year ago. And they're all different stories. One was I didn't have my passport when I was taking a selfie of my ass, when I was with my wife. When I was trying to take my pants down and all of them, but every case I was a homosexual trying to lure people, other gay men on Facebook, which is, wow, really? Are gay people on Facebook? I didn't even know that was a thing.
They were just thinking about like American things, I think, you know, they were just trying to use American buzzwords.
Yeah.
It's like they're so afraid to be, to be humiliated or to be talked down to. You know, these guys in some of these countries, they just are so fearful of not being respected.
Yes. And it's the extreme of toxic masculinity, because all the men there, first of all, not to be whatever, but all the men there look a little bit like Eric Griffin. They're all kind of like slovenly and a little bit fat, and they have mustaches. And literally to a person, every one of them, I was like, you know, I could fuck you up one-on-one in a second, right? Like, they're not athletic. They're all chain smoking. They're all kind of fat. And meanwhile, when they would take me to the bathroom, they'd hold my hand to take me to the bathroom. The men hold hands all the time, everywhere they go. It's very bizarre. It's a very effete country, and the men are very effete. And here, meanwhile, they castigate homosexuality like it's the greatest sin of all time.
First of all, everybody does smoke over there.
Crazy.
It's just absurd. Yeah. It's just the wildest thing you've ever seen. It's like, do you know nothing?
Here's the crazy thing. I don't think I've told this before, but so everyone's chain smoking there, and all the cops would basically just ash on the floor of the precinct. And every hour or so, a woman would come in with a bucket, like wrapped in a burqa, come in with a bucket and just sweep and mop the floor of all the cigarette ashes. And then they would repeat the process every hour. They literally just ashed wherever, on the desk, on the floor. It didn't matter. It was, I mean, that alone was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Like,
and she probably actually was really grateful to have that work.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And then kids would come in. Kids would get taken out of the little cell, and their mothers would come in like, oh, my God, my son. Because all the mothers were coming in to defend their kids. My guess is that the kids that were arrested were in the cells, because they were all probably between ages like 13 and 15.
They were also taking their pants off?
No, but maybe. But I imagine that they were in the cell because they were either, maybe they were doing like homosexual stuff, and they would come and the cops would be in front of the mother and just smack the kid in the face. Like hardcore, just like, and like yell at the kid, and the mother would be crying, and they'd hit the kid again, and then send the kid home. But it's just so crazy to see a cop who's there with fat cop with a notepad, and then he put the notepad away and just smacked the kid five times in the face in front of his mother. And that was the penalty.
God. Oh my God. That is so shocking. I mean, oh my God, there's so much craziness, right?
Yeah.
It's so wonderful to travel. It's so wonderful to learn and to be involved in what, you know, because when I do go overseas, I always think about how tiny Los Angeles is and how tiny my little apartment is and my little tiny home and my little bed, you know, compared to, you know, who's out there. You go into Istanbul International Airport and it's like a city.
Yeah.
But the downside is, you can't take your pants off just anywhere.
You can't, you really can't take, I mean, I have taken my pants off in America so much. And when I went to Jeddah and I went to Egypt, I wasn't thinking all about taking my pants off, obviously. But it also, when he said, are you going to do a shot like this in front of the pyramids? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I haven't thought about it. I might have. And then if I had, they would have sliced off my butt. Oh, this is what the lawyer told me. This Embark's lawyer told me, because he spoke English, not the guy who, the associate who came to visit me. He said, I told him about the story about how the guy said, if I had a picture of my butt, they would have sliced it off. He said, oh, what he was telling you is that you would have gotten the death penalty.
Wow.
And they would have, the death penalty, the way they would have executed it was by cutting your butt off.
Oh my God.
Because when they were looking for ways to punish me and they were trying to figure it out when I was with the three prosecutors, they took out the friggin' Quran. They weren't looking at like a new legal, like law review. It was like a tome, and every edict had like a saber underneath it.
Wow.
They were basically trying to figure out while I was sitting there waiting, like if a picture does show up of him mooning on Instagram or YouTube, whatever they thought, or Facebook, whatever they thought it was going to be, that the law would have been to cut off my ass until I died.
Well, Bill, look, you and I both know that you've, you've crossed the line, and you need to be made an example.
Couldn't they just spank me?
I am so sorry that happened to you. Seriously, you could get PTSD. Is that it? Wait, PST, post-traumatic PTSD from that. I can imagine, you know, I mean, it really is like a locked up abroad situation. It was really a great story.
Yeah. I think the whole time, all I kept thinking was like, wait, I'm not going out like this. I've had a crazy life and a lot of near misses. There's no way this is how I'm going down. So I never really, people were like, when you're in that interrogation room at 6th of October City, were you afraid? And I was a little afraid. I never got crazy afraid because I just kept thinking, nah, this isn't it. I'm not going to die like this. Apparently I was that close. I was that close to being, I mean, the guy, when they let me go, he said, you're very lucky we're letting you go. You're very lucky. And I was like, lucky what? I didn't even do anything. But my friend did tell me, who does a lot of work in Saudi Arabia, he goes, I would never go to Saudi Arabia unless I had a burner phone. I would only bring a burner phone. Because anything that's on your phone can be used against you. If you have, oh, here's another funny thing. He said, do you have any anti-Islamic posts on social media?
Oh, God.
And I said, no. But I 100% retweeted a Bill Maher tweet saying like, hey, maybe we can admit that Muslim is a fucked up religion or Islam is a fucked up religion. Why can't we? And I retweeted that, and I was probably about a year old, that tweet. But their internet was so bad. They were on my Twitter too, by the way. They were probably scrolling up, and they probably only got like a couple months in before they stopped. If they had 5G, I'd probably be dead. I'm serious.
Real quick, we got to wrap this up. I was in Heidelberg, Germany once, and me and my goofy friend Gidget, we were both 21, we got arrested in Heidelberg for not paying for the bus fare. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And here's where you get arrested is when they say passport. If you give it to them, you're arrested, essentially.
Oh,
they're not giving it back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, really anywhere. I'm just saying anywhere overseas, you can't really give up your passport. Although I don't know really what your choice was, you personally. But we got taken to the police center and we got, you know, we were there for like 5 hours. And then they put us in the police car and drove us to the Heidelberg train station and watched us get tickets and watched us pull out of town.
Wow, that's amazing.
We have pictures in the police car and from the tracks. It was kind of funny. Anyway, thank you so much, Bill Dawes. I'm so happy to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Christine. This is great. Thank you so much.
All right, you guys, don't forget about the Story Worthy Hour of Power every Sunday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Head over to storyworthypodcast.com. Right at the very top, there's a link to the ticket site. There's always a free option. We're having a blast. We're playing Story Smash in the after show. Blanket Patches judging. You guys, everybody needs a little comedy right now. So I got you guys covered on Sunday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Bill Dawes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Story Worthy on iTunes and visit the Story Worthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.